Okay, everybody, we're going to talk about why I think at the, how do you say that, overwhelming request. I'd like you to keep this in mind. I have no time to play, unfortunately. I have 25 minutes now. But I'd like to keep that in mind when you're designing your projects. And we can talk about this again, so no worry. So, why Hawaii? And I might contradict myself in a year about this statement, but that's okay. It's the mantle plume with the, by far, the largest magma flux. It's 100 times more important than any other mantle plume. And that's something we keep forgetting. It's the best studied, so everybody say, why the hell do you want to study Hawaii? Well, we still discover all kinds of interesting things. I guess some people will argue it doesn't have a deep mantle origin, but among the mantle plumes, it's probably one of the best ones. And it's the first documented occurrence of double chain. The surface is about 30,000 kilometers. That doesn't, square kilometers, that doesn't tell you much. It's a little smaller than Belgium. That still doesn't tell you much. That's okay. Belgium beat Brazil last week. okay. There is one big, very interesting part with Hawaii, is that we look at the volume flux, and this is an old curve, but the big picture is still valid. As you go away from Kilauea, here, the active volcano, and very active right now, so as you go away in age. But what I'm getting at is that contrary to many mantle plume models, you have a significant increase of activity recently. You have seen the plume models where you have the big head, and then it's followed by the tail, and usually you have much less flux produced. So that raises interesting questions. Two chains that have been documented geographically a long time ago, and they called the lower trend and the Kea trend, basically on the basis of the name of the tallest volcanoes. They also very distinct geochemically. We have here lead isotopes versus strontium isotopes. You can see that the Kea volcanoes basically plot here, high lead, low strontium, while Loa is pointing towards an enriched component. That puzzled us for many years. So what do we do with that? And one good place to look at is the island of Hawaii, clearly the largest, where you have five volcanoes on the big island. You have Kohala, Mauna Kea, and Kilauea on the Kea trend, and you have Walalai, Mauna Loa, and Lauhihi, which is still underwater, on the lower trend. Now, each volcano has a lifespan of about 1 million years. That basically corresponds to the time for the Pacific plates to move away from the plume, about 1 million years. One important point that you might be able to understand now, and keep that in mind, because I come back with that, is that we need to compare apples with apples. And when we talk about the Hawaiian mantle plume, and we want to analyze, have the best samples to trace the composition of the plume, we want to use tholeiitic basalt shield stage. You're going to see people that analyze post-shield. You're going to see, well, we have no choice for Lauhihi. We analyze pre-chims. But these represent a very small volume of the volcano and also have very, very different compositions. They're picking something very different. So today, I'm only going to talk about tholeiitic basalt. 98% of the volume of the volcano, as reflected in this cartoon. The other, the anomalous guys, Diamond Head, you no need to expand. it's a post-erosional or secondary volcanism. Haleakala, it's post-shield, those have alkali composition. What does that mean? So we have our total alkalis, potassium, sodium, versus silica. You have a line here. That line is the boundary between tholeitic and alkalic. And VET, what does that mean? No.
Wait.
How can you connect that with what Esteban did?
Oh, it has to, it tells you about the temperature at which the...
Well, it's also a thermal design, and you don't cross that boundary very easily.
Okay.
Yeah. You remember the phase diagram? Yeah. That's why I'm picking on you. So what I want to emphasize is all these tholeitic basalts are here below the line. And you have the post shield and the secondary volcanism on Hawaii that's alkalic, and you have also most of the other oceanic islands being up there. And we haven't looked at that in enough details. That's something in the long term that we should do as geochemists. So, what do they look like? That's typical huge flows of tholeitic lavas, RR and Pahoho. You destroy your hiking boots there in a week. Huge volume, that's basically what I want to indicate to you. What does 5 million years in a tropical climate do to these lavas? It's this. We are on Kauai, 5 million years old, tropical. Why am I insisting on that? Some of our key elements are going to be very disturbed with all this alteration. We learned a lot with the HSDP, the Hawaii Scientific Drilling Project. Their aim was to go drill the mantle. I'll spare you the details. They reached 3,500 meters after three experiments, three steps, and run out of money. But the idea was to reach the mantle. What they did instead is basically have a continuous record of lava evolution. And one key thing that we had to do is obtain ages so we could know how old the lavas were, put that in plume models, and also estimate the flux. You can see that the model fits relatively well the ages, but what is striking about the ages here? There were about 300 samples in HSDP. There are many gaps. And indeed, so these ages are argon-argon, meaning they're using the argon, the potassium-40 decay into argon. And because we are in this tholeitic composition, there's almost no potassium. So those lavas are very difficult to date. That's the parenthesis, but it's a very important point. So let's go look at what we found. We have sampled basically every single island above seawater from the Big Island to Kauai, so about 5 million years of activity on Hawaii. Some samples are very difficult to access. For instance, on Maui, Haleakala, there is basically no tholeite. Everything is covered by this post sheet. We have three or four samples. So I want to bring home to you the message that there are chemical analyses and isotopic analyses, and there are chemical analyses and isotopic analyses. And that there is a big evolution about what people produced 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and today. Very, very big difference. That's the first thing. The second thing is, for those of you who remember my lecture of Friday, The elements we want to look at, looking at hydrogenic isotopes, are at the end of the periodic table, so they're mobile. Oceanic island basalts, where are we? In the middle of the ocean. We have some recovered by drilling. When we drill, we have drilling fluids, we contaminate, we dredge, or we sample with a ROV. What I'm getting at, those samples are altered. And if you dissolve them and analyze them like that, you're not going to get the signature you want, because you will have your primary magma signature mixed with some type of alteration. So what we do, we crush the samples, and then we leach them with HCl6 normal. And sometimes we have to leach up to 15 steps. The point is to basically get rid of any color in your solution, because that reflects the presence of some of the mobile cations. 15 steps, 30 minutes each. And then we bring these samples in the clean labs, we do our chemical separation, and we analyze them on our instruments. Clean labs, and when I say clean labs, they're very, very clean. That's why I don't want to use my chalk. We bring strontium. That's why I don't want anybody to bring their phones. We bring all the rare earth, lead, name it. Why is that? Does somebody remember what we talked about on Friday? Do we deal with major elements, minor elements, trace elements? Trace, meaning we are in the ppm level. So very, very low concentration, and it's very easy to contaminate, especially with lead, because, and we're going to focus on lead today, lead is everywhere because it was added to gasoline for many years. It's a heavy metal, and it just stays in the environment. One thing I forgot, it's late in the day. Ask questions if you have any. So clean labs, and then fancy instruments. So I don't remember the computation time this morning, what the sum was. That little guy has a magnet of 4.5 tons and costs $2.5 million, Canadian. So what do we get? We get lead isotopes. And in this case, 206, 204, 208, 204, we're dealing with two decay systems, thorium-232 into lead-208 and uranium-238 in lead-206. And when we analyze all lavas from different volcanoes, after all this cleaning and so on, we get trends. If you look at previous data, people were getting what I call potatoes. And I'll show you potatoes. That's the example. This is the example of Kauai. It's new data from our lab, unpublished, and that's the comparison with the literature data, which is actually not that old. It's only 10 years ago. But you can see that that's the literature error, while the recent samples, the error is lower, is smaller than the data point. Gives you a completely different resolution. So, what was defining about and the application of isotopes in the structure of the conduit in Hawaii was the study of Abushami in 2005. They used one of these high-precision techniques, and you can see that all the volcanoes define line. Now, in a lead-lead plot, lines can have two meanings. Could be an isochron, or it could be a mixing line. And this is giving you an age of 3.something billion years. Clearly, it doesn't work. So the interpretation is that those are mixing lines between N members. And I'm going to skip this. So you have your mixing line between N members, and between, because everything is the same chemical element, You can simply as long as you know the concentration of your N members, you can slide on this line and calculate the relative proportion of your N members. It's very simple. So what does this mean? It means that the Hawaiian mantle source was very heterogeneous at the scale of the volcano, first thing. The second thing is that that's the same diagram than the one with all the lines, except that it's color-coded according to the Loa and the Kea trend volcanoes. Yes?
So the when you're talking about the mixing, does that mean mixing things of different... Does it automatically mean things of different composition or different age? So that if you can interpret things in terms of time or stuff.
You can mix things that have different ages, but that's in the lead diagram, it's not going to make you any difference. You have your samples today. You can mix a sample that was erupted yesterday with a continental crust that was in place a billion years ago. Your mixing, the position on your mixing line is entirely dependent on the relative concentration of the samples.
But you can move about on that diagram with age as well.
Yes, you can move, you will have moved in this diagram with age.
Dominique?
Yes?
At the beginning you reminded us there's been a lot of alteration and weathering.
Yeah.
And you just attributed the mixing to the mantle.
Yeah.
Can you remind us why you don't attribute it to alteration or crustal assimilation?
Good question. If we had crustal assimilation, we'd be upper crust would be up on the ceiling, lower crust would be down.
So it means you just need a little bit.
But we cleaned our samples. We acid leached them and we removed up to 40 to 60% of the phases that were mobile, and so we got rid of all of that. If it was, and then the other thing that we did, which I didn't want to show you, we analyzed some of the potential contaminants, some of the iron manganese crust, for instance, and those are about up there. So you would see trends going up there. And the last point, it's also a mass balance. All these are toluides. They're very low lead contents, usually between 0.2 and 1, 1.2. If they had been contaminated, you'd see the lead concentration shooting very quickly because iron manganese crust and continental crust are very rich in lead. And we can also use what you all hate, the spider diagram, and looking if we have a regular pattern or if we have a zigzag pattern. If we have a zigzag pattern, we'll see traces of alteration for the mobile elements, but if we have a regular pattern, we'll know it has not been remobilized. So we have many ways to check that. Yes?
I just want to make a comment that in order to have crustal assimilation here, crustal contamination, we need to have crust, and we're in Hawaii. So you can assimilate all the oceanic crust that is super depleted, but there is no continental crust that will mess up this.
Well, they found zircon is the Southwest Indian Ridge.
Because there is continental crust there, but not here.
Yeah.
Andesites are not continental crust. Just because you find an andesite in Hawaii doesn't mean that you make continental crust.
What's your first step?
And the same in Mars.
Anyway, so if we look at this, we see that in this diagram, you have very different isotopic symmetry. And remember, the error is smaller than the data point between Loa side volcano and Kea side volcano. And I better speed up. In this diagram, we can measure this difference by this ratio, which is called radiogenic lead. And basically what we have is the lead isotopic composition measured in the sample minus the original lead of the Earth. That's our D0. And basically, that's a proxy of thorium-uranium. So this is enriched in thorium-uranium on the lower side of things. And if we plot this ratio versus distance, this is what we have. I'll come back to that. That's what led Abushami et al. To this model that people call the the spaghetti model. Now, Wafa and her team had 100 samples, mostly on the Big Island. We remember we went and we analyzed everything, sampled all the islands, trying to analyze the spread, and with 700 samples, all, and I've not used any of the literature data, that's not high precision, first thing, and the second thing, the norm here means we have renormalized all the literature data to the same standard values. Might sound something completely logical to you, but people don't do that routinely, and they should. So you're comparing apples with apples again. And basically what we see is that there is a very clear difference between the, I wanted to make sure I didn't forget that, the lower the lower side and the Kea side. The colors are blue, blue, mauve, green, angular symbols on the lower side and orange, red, brown on the Kea side. Now, if we draw lines among each volcano, you can see that on the Kea side, they rotate around the average composition of Mauna Loa today, here, while on the Kea side, they basically converge to an N-member that's up there, and that is the Kea N-member. So completely different geometry of the N-members. The other thing is, if we take this radiogenic lead ratio plotted versus distance from Kilauea, individual volcano, two standard deviation on the average of all the analysis, what do you see here? There are two observations in this diagram. What?
Error.
Those are not error bars.
Two standard deviations.
Yes. But there is a difference. Are the standard deviations the same on both trends? No. First thing. Second thing, the trends are pretty well distinct. So you have more variation here, which indicates that the lower side is more heterogeneous than the Kea side. We are in the same mantle plume. Conduit, what's the size of a conduit? 100 maximum, those, and some of these volcanoes are 50 kilometers away. So we really struggle trying to understand that. And then I had to give the daily lecture at AGU 8 years ago, and I was completely freaked out because I had to talk in front of 1,000 people, and I had not done that. And I also wanted to appear intelligent. And I didn't have the teaching techniques that I have now. So I did my homework, looked carefully, and then I noticed that you are all convinced that mantle plumes are concentrated above the edges of the LLSVP, that the lower side is actually coming from the side of the Pacific LLSVP, while the Kea side is coming from the average Pacific mantle. And that's how we came up with this proposition that lower side was more heterogeneous because it's sampling material that has been accumulated. It's more enriched material that has been accumulated at the core mantle boundary in the LLSVP, the Pacific LLSVP. We went back to Hawaii, and I don't think I have time to go into much of these details, so let me jump ahead. We analyze things more, have more details, and can see variations. I want to show this, otherwise I'll be too long. So you remember, and we'll finish on this, and we'll come back tomorrow in the group geochemistry wrap-up. Strontium lead. We have a Y here. We have, when we put our data on the sheet lavas, we have here Kea, lower. We have other things in this end, which is called unwedged mantle 1. If you look at the squares, the diamonds here, this yellow is Pitcairn, and then we have this orange that is Kerguelen, and we have the brown that is Tristan and Garth. Where are these islands? Do you know? No? Come on. The French need to know where Kerguelen is. So, Hawaii and Pitcairn are here above the Pacific, LLSVP. Kerguelen is here at the western end of the African LLSVP. Tristan is at the eastern end, it's the opposite. Eastern end of the African LLSVP, western end of the African LLSVP, Tristan. And they form two independent trends here in this diagram, which in this paper I suggested as being an indication that the two LLSVP are composed of material with different composition. And I leave you to that, so I'm on time.
Can you remind me which, if it was LOA or KEA that was coming from the LSVP?
LOA.
So if KEA is not coming from an LSVP, yet it's still on this trend, does that imply that Tristan and Kerguelen also have a non-LSVP component?
No, so KEA is here, and this is the published data. Actually, when you get rid of, you only look at shield lavas, that's what you have. These are post-shield. You're tracing something else. What I'm getting at is that KEA is actually pointing to Prima, C, Fozo. What's the last one? There's another. Anyway, the common mantle, and that's the average Pacific mantle. But we are in the Pacific Ocean here. Here, if the interpretation is indeed correct that these big mantle plumes, and Kerguelen and Hawaii are definitely two of the largest mantle plumes, are sampling deep in the mantle at the core mantle boundary. This indicates that the African LLSVP has a different composition. That's what it means.
So Fozo is just general mantle?
Fozo is just the average mantle. It's one of the any, you remember, I don't remember if it's Rita or Sujo or you who showed the tetrahedron. So all the mixing trends with all the oceanic islands ended up there. And in the tetrahedron, it's Fozo because it's called the focal plane.
Okay, maybe then we'll...
Just a quick question. I mean, I'm convinced, but playing devil's advocate, what about the hotspots that plot towards EM2 then? Or, I mean, many of them also overlie the LLSVPs. Right?
Yeah.
Samoa, for example.
But I have no problem with that. My personal interpretation right now is that the LLSVP are made from a mixing or accumulation of material that can partly be primordial and that can be recycled over, I don't know, many billion years. There has been subduction and recycling, and so I have no problem them being heterogeneous.
So is the Hawaii trend EM3?
No, it's EM1. These two are EM1. Yeah, we'll come back to that tomorrow. You didn't ask a lead question.